The following Bass Talk Live iTunes podcast is brought to you by Lowrance.
BTL, coming at you.
Bass Cat Boats, Strike King Lures, AFCO, and Duckett Fishing. Good Wednesday, everybody. Welcome once again to BTL Bass Talk Live, where we're going to talk bass fishing and anything else that we want to talk about. Matthew, we are wrapping up the week of a third show, of which has been a great week so far, but a good show today. We're going to have the Rookie of the Year on the FLW Tour on today, Ron Nelson, and a lot of other things going on that I want to pick your brain on before we take a break and come back with Ron here in about 15 minutes. But how you doing today, man?
You got me a new hat.
I did.
I'm pumped. I like it. It's a Richardson 112.
Okay.
That's the best type of hats for people who wear the slightly curved bill, not the flat bill, not the...
It's kind of high for me.
A little bit. Yeah, yeah, I mean, I can pull it off, some of them. There's like a Richardson 112. I think it says P after it. That's like what the Sunline hat that I always wear is. That's like the deal. This one kind of makes my ears stick out, but because I have the headsets on, I can get away with it during the show until it's broken in.
Yeah.
But it's the new...
You look good in it, man.
It's the new Lowrance hat.
Hell, you can look good in anything. That's the way you roll.
The new Lowrance hat.
All right. A couple of things I want to touch on real quick. First, I want to thank everybody for all the feedback and the comments, not only on iTunes, but also on the YouTube page. For some reason, we've had some issues simul-streaming to the YouTube page, so we've had to take the replay and throw it out after the show is over. Hopefully today, I have corrected that situation, and that's not an issue. If it is, as soon as the show's over, we'll get the replay out there on YouTube as soon as we can. For the iTunes listeners, I can't thank you guys enough for putting all the ratings and reviews out there. Please continue to do that. It helps us out tremendously with just what we do and how we're trying to make this program even better with the fans, with the sponsors, with the anglers. So Matt and I greatly appreciate the time that it takes to do a rating and a review over on iTunes. So pretty cool stuff, man. All right, I want to touch on something, Matthew. And I've watched a lot of baseball in my life.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I played...
Played at OU.
Played college baseball. I've never seen anything like what took place yesterday in Cincinnati. Now, have you seen the highlights of this?
Was this the one where the... pitcher just was he getting pulled?
He was getting yanked,
and he just decided, let's just run over
Amir
and start a brouhaha with the Pirates bench.
All right, there is a situation between the Reds and the Pirates where it's basically bing ball, you know, unwritten rules. Mm-hmm. And we're going to get into unwritten rules in the bass fishing game. That's how I'm going to kind of throw it back. But these two teams have developed quite the hatred.
It kind of reminds me of the Reds Cardinals rivalry from like 5, 6, 7 years ago. Remember, they would always get into brawls, and I still dislike the Reds because I'm a Cardinals fan.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I didn't mind seeing it.
So he's getting ready. Garrett's getting ready to get yanked, and he's just chirping at the Pittsburgh bench. And the next thing you know, there's like 24 guys over on the Pittsburgh dugout side.
All giving him the business.
He just decides that he's going to go from the mound directly to the dugout and start throwing blows. I've never seen anything like that before at any level, even at the high school level or college level where some crazy stuff happens. It was just insane. And then the next thing I know, bench is clear. Yasiel Puig is getting involved.
In his defense, it was easy to pick him out because of the hairstyle selection. You know, everyone else looks as the same, and he's got that stripe down his head.
Yeah. Would you look good in that look? Would you go with that look? Blonde on top, dark on the side.
I have done it in the past.
Have you really?
Oh, yeah.
When you played hockey?
Back in high school. No, I had the... the cheetah print blonde tips on top of the hair. Yeah.
Had the hockey hair working, didn't
you? No, the hockey hair's the flow out of the back. This was like more Backstreet Boys look, unfortunately. It was high school.
Dude,
was,
you got to bring in some pictures of that.
Early 2000s. You know, you put the cap on and then they take like the crochet needle and they pull a tuft of hair out of the deal and then they turn it blonde.
Yeah,
it's not the smartest choice.
Anyway, look, fighting in baseball, it's been going on for years, years and years and years. Obviously, not like fighting in the NHL or any other league of hockey or level of hockey. But for a dude to go off the mound and go directly to the
one before,
unbelievable. And there's all this discussion now about the unwritten rules in baseball, and it seems like there's more unwritten rules in the sport of baseball than there is in any other game. Now, let's talk about the unwritten rules in fishing. What are some of the unwritten rules in fishing? Can you throw a couple out there to me? I hate to put you on the spot.
There's millions of unwritten rules. It's the most unwritten rules. I mean, obviously, the first unwritten rule would be before when you get there. You don't even have your boat in the water. You could already break unwritten rules as far as how you're launching. Or do you have your stuff ready? Is your co-angler picked up? Are your headlights off? Are you taking too much time on the ramp? Are you there's three unwritten rules right there that can really piss people off before you even get the boat in the water.
Yeah. How about on the water? Unwritten rules.
Oh, yeah. Where you're fishing, where you're casting, where the co-angler's casting, your proximity to other people.
Yeah.
How you run past people.
Okay. We've spent a lot of time on the water with these guys on numerous events at the highest level. Do you think that the vast majority of the fields respect the unwritten rules, or do you think that there's guys out there that couldn't give a rat's ass about what they do as long as they win?
I think there's two reasons why unwritten rules are not followed. One
is it greed?
No, one would be desperation.
Okay.
I mean, I think there's guys that absolutely have to cash a check
because
to get
of their
to the
financial
next,
situation
to get to the next tournament,
right.
or to qualify for an event. Or, I mean, I think desperation is one, and I think perception is the other one. I think there.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there's some guys who are perceived who perceive that another angler is breaking an unwritten rule, but that angler does not believe they're breaking an unwritten rule. So miscommunication, I guess. Those are the two biggest reasons, desperation and miscommunication.
All right. Now, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to go back. You still haven't had a chance to watch the MLF championship, have you?
No.
And I don't know if the highlights that you mentioned that you watch, you actually saw this.
Yeah, I saw it.
All right. You know what happened.
Yeah, 100%. Right? Know what happened, read about it, saw
Wheeler
it.
Wheeler had the area. Right. Wheeler was established. What ended up happening, Matthew?
All four anglers. Wheeler got off to a big lead.
Rule?
No, because I believe that what you're seeing there, you're in a championship round. Now, mind you, when MLF started, they took a NASCAR approach, and this is still MLF. This is not the Bass Pro Tour.
Yeah.
They have had meetings where they encourage conflict, where they encourage angler-on-angler interaction. I mean, remember, you've had... Was it Grigsby casting over Tommy Biffle's line or anyway? So this is our year in a world
championship.
Okay, here's the other thing: they had not been on the lake, they had not seen the lake. You saw as Aaron Martin's called it, it looked like a boomerang that lake that they had.
Yeah.
So it's pretty damn obvious in the pre-spawn here. There's going to be one or two places where these fish are, and there's only four anglers on it, right?
Yeah.
So do you not think that Aaron, Tock, and Ike are completely clueless out there and only know where those fish were spawning?
I'm not disagreeing
Jacob
with
Wheeler.
That.
So now what are you supposed to do? In a lake that's that small, in a little bitty oxbow, what are you supposed to just go, well, Jacob got there first, so we're done. We're not going to have a shot at winning
the
world championship.
Is that not one of the unwritten rules, though?
I don't know if it is in that situation or not because of the proximity that they were put in.
Dude, it wasn't a fishbowl, for crying out loud.
But maybe that area where they were spawning, based on where the current was, based on the conditions, the clean water, the, you said it yesterday, that's the only part of the lake that had the hydrilla in it, based on what Jacob Wheeler said.
Well, I don't know that. That's not what I said. What I said was, is I pointed out that Wheeler found the hydrilla.
Hypothetically, let's say it is.
But I don't think that's what the case was, and who knows? The fact of the matter is this, Matthew. What I'm saying is, you are fishing for a lot of money. Everybody had the opportunity to start in that area first.
Right.
Agreed?
Well, yeah, and it took
Wheeler
some of them less than 2 hours to get into that area.
Hang on a minute. Everybody knows what Wheeler's doing because of Score Tracker. Correct?
Right, that's the beauty of Major League Fishing.
So why would you go into the area that he's already established his area?
Because the reasons I just said. Maybe it's the only area that is like that.
Okay, I'm going to
go back.
What are you
going to throw in the white towel?
And I know people, and I'm kind of one of them.
Who knows what production has told them before that? Maybe they went into it and said, this is the world championship. We want to have you guys mix it up. I know that they've said that in past years to anglers.
Dude, if they said that in the national whatever,
world championship. Yeah, it's a made-for-TV event on CBS,
mean,
of course. You don't know what the other factors, the mitigating factors were that led
and
to that.
And never will.
You're just seeing the two-hour version and a 45-minute edited version from Jacob Wheeler.
I'm going to go back to the original question.
I think if you have Aaron on, he would be able to put a different light on it. If you have Talk on, he would be able to explain it. He explained a little bit about it in the show.
Yeah. All right. Based upon personalities, and if you saw any of the interaction between Wheeler and Talk, dude, it was like they were having a party.
Yeah, but Jacob Wheeler has, what is it? What is that called? Passive aggressive? Very passive aggressive. Like,
anyway,
the more he stressed that it didn't bother him, the more you realize, like, he was pretty pissed. The more he smiled and said, oh, this is funny.
No, I agree with that.
That you could tell that, like...
But should you not? Is that not one of the unwritten rules? The dude has his area established. Don't go in there. And what would happen if you had certain personalities other than the personalities that were involved in that?
What would happen in that situation? But it, as a general rule, the unwritten rule is don't crowd the leader. Now, a lot of people don't have to even contend with that because, 99.9% of the tournaments, you don't know who the leader is, and 99%, it's a one-day tournament. So...
Well, I'm just telling you, based upon the situation...
But that comes down, like I said, that comes down to communication.
But what do you mean? Talking beforhand?
No, I mean, talking on the water.
Can they talk in between periods? Everybody knew that he blew it out of the water in that first period. You know, is it right for Wheeler to go over to Talk and Ike and Aaron and say, look, guys,
no, but if
I
one of
busted
those...
my ass finding this stuff. You guys need to stay out of my area.
No, if one of those guys had come over and been like, look, it's pretty obvious you're smoking us on Score Tracker. I've been up and down this lake. This is the only thing that fits the pre-spawn pattern. Mm-hmm. I got to fish this. It's the final day. It's the four. Where is your sweet spot? I'll stay out of it and try to find a sweet spot of my own.
That might have happened.
Yeah.
That might have happened. All right. We've seen that happen before on the FLW Tour and on the Elite Series. But that is a situation, especially when you have, and I love the term that you used earlier, desperation.
Mm-hmm.
When you have that situation, you're right. Guys will do things that normally they will not do. But we've also seen on tour, having been out there, there is some communication that takes place behind the scenes toward these guys, what I call, is cut a deal before things happen. Agreed?
Yeah.
All right, now, we're going to take a break here shortly. I want to ask you one more thing. All right, you are a seasoned veteran, experienced at the club level now, and you're dipping your toes in the pool in the Costa. But what I want to know is, from a local standpoint, do you believe, especially here in Oklahoma, where a number of team tournaments take place, a number of BFLs, is the unwritten rule of if you see a guy and you ask the guy, yeah, man, dude, I got 22, all right, and he says, you know, this is my area, you kind of need to get out, does that take place, or is it just a free-for-all, it doesn't matter, it's a one-day shootout, do what you want to, and you have major conflict from a local standpoint?
Depends on why you're there.
Okay.
If you're there,
if you're
on that point because you've seen Head and Carrier there,
Yeah.
Then yeah, you're breaking the unwritten rule. If you're on that point because you know there's a school of fish there, you got boat 22 and the local sticks are boat 30.
Yeah.
Then it's a little bit of a different ball game. Then it's a, hey, I was a better draw than you and I know that I'm here for the right reasons.
All right. That's a fair point.
I mean,
let's see here. David in Wisconsin. I'm just going to kind of change his comment a little bit. What if Jacob Wheeler would have been Tommy Biffle? Do you think Tommy would have let those guys come in there? Based upon his personality and based upon the way that he is. I think a lot of the unwritten rule has to do with who the personalities and who the anglers are.
I think it would have been involved. About the same.
Do
Jacob
really?
Wheeler bitched and moaned a lot. He just did it in a very passive-aggressive way.
All right.
Tommy would not have been that passive-aggressive.
Yeah.
I mean, there'd have been some grunting.
Yeah. And is it right for somebody to kind of mark off a certain area and go, hey, man, you know, this whole bank over here is mine? That's another
like
conversation.
I said, that's another unwritten rule there, too.
Yeah. Yeah.
But like Wheeler said, he said, oh, Ike's on the other side. That's cool with him.
It's
fluid. Like you told me one time, and I live by it, and it doesn't matter whether if there's someone that's adjacent to it or where I'm starting, if it crosses my mind that I am in the wrong, don't do it, whether it's idling past someone, whether it's starting somewhere. Now, if I feel like I can start 30 feet from someone, but I do not, it does not cross my mind that it is in the wrong, I'll start 30 feet from someone. I'll idle by someone. I'll share an area with someone. But if I have to think, is this the right thing? Or if I have to try to justify it at all, then I do not do it.
Yeah.
And I've always, and I've had conflicts like that. And I've recently stood by my ground because it did not cross my mind that what I was doing was in the wrong. So I stand up for myself.
Yeah. It's a great topic to discuss. And it would be really interesting to see how that whole situation has evolved over time with the younger anglers.
But it's different for everything. It's perspective, too.
Yeah.
Just because I don't think I was in the wrong doesn't mean I wasn't in the wrong. It just means that at that time, in my perspective, I didn't feel like I was.
Crazy stuff in Cincinnati, though. Yeah. Unbelievable. All right. We're going to take a break. Come back with Ron Nelson right here on a Wednesday. Everybody, stay tuned.
Sleek new design with easy control file. The clearest images underwater with uncompromising range. Live mapping from the touchscreen. View notifications, video, even Google Maps on screen. And for the first time ever, real-time view of fish movements with Live Sight Sonar. HDS Live. New from Lowrance.
I got my power pole down, stuck in the mud in the bottom of the lake, sitting so still in the wind and the waves, could even be a hurricane. I got my power pole down.
It's about the hours spent getting everything just right. It's the attention to detail. Good just isn't good enough. It's the years spent on the water, day after day. When you tie on a bait by Strike King, you're standing on the shoulders of legends.
AFCO has a new foul weather rain suit called the Hydronaut. A lot of the features that I really like about it first is the speed vent hood. If it's raining out, you know, how a person gets wet is when you run down the lake and the hood comes down. With the speed vent hood, it's going to stay up. It has a camera mount in the pocket on the chest. The Hydronaut has a two-layer, 100% waterproof nylon shell. If you're interested in a rain suit that has a lot of cool features that's going to keep you dry, you need to check out the Hydronaut from AFCO.
The Heart of the Basscat experience is the pride of ownership that comes with each blast-off and every precision hairpin turn. It's a rush of adrenaline driven by the total commitment to performance and the knowledge that no compromises were made building a craft that stands up to the rigors of competitive angling. Basscat combines the latest proprietary materials and building techniques with over 40 years of continuous family-run operation and our unwillingness to accept anything less than the best. Welcome to Basscat. Feel the rush.
It's Aaron Martins here. I'm going to be telling you about a new product by Sunline. It's Siglon PE times 8. I've been using it almost extensively all year for my frogging, flipping, drop shotting, shaky heading, worming, jerk baiting. It's by far my favorite Sunline braid. I don't say this unless I think it's true, but honestly, it's the best braid in the market out of any of the braids. Definitely check it out. It's a price point line, $14.95 for 165 yards, and that could last you a whole year, just one spool with using leader material. So again, it's Siglon PE times 8. It's my favorite braid, and I think if you use it, it'll be your favorite braid too.
Blue Water by TH Marine. Offering LED lighting solutions for your boat, trailer, truck, ATV, and so much more. Engineered and built to be rugged with waterproof and submersible options. Designed for easy installation, Blue Water is available in a variety of colors and styles. All backed by a limited lifetime warranty. Blue Water by TH Marine.
The message is simple. Win. Coming in 2019, the Ducat Fishing Silverado. It's coming at you for $99.95. Check it out at DucatFishing.com. There is no gray area, just silver. Check it out. All right, we are back on a Wednesday, wrapping things up for the week. And we're going to wrap things up with a guy that's just won a ton of money over on the Costa side. I did not realize
that. Yes, the FLW thing is it's kind of weird because I think there's a lot of anglers over there. You know, their field size varies anywhere between 140 to 180 depending on the year, and then you have the five divisions of the Costas that typically have over 200. So you've got some of these guys that really kind of fly under the radar who are just ridiculously good performers. We obviously had Michael Neal on last week, talked about what he was able to do with FLW. Brian Schmidt, who actually just led the Bassmaster Open for the first day, he's one of those. And I was talking with another FLW tour angler, and he, you know, he was really high. He's like, dude, you know, people aren't talking about Joseph Webster and how good he is. And then he goes, now who's the other guy that flies under the radar? And I said, Austin Felix. And he goes, bingo.
Yeah.
You know, he's the guy he zeroed. He ended up basically in the top 20. And then you start looking at a guy like Ron Nelson, who was a rookie this year in the largest field of rookies in FLW Tour history. Yeah. I believe there were 34 of them. Won it fairly convincingly. And you start looking at his stats and you're like, gee, you're like, this guy's averaging like $7,500 in earnings per tournament that he enters. He's never finished, lower than 15 in the last 4 years, fishing two divisions of the Costas. You look at how strong he finished, top 10.
He likes Champlain, too.
He likes Champlain, and he's got to be up there with those guys after the first year of just quiet consistency, but, you know. His banker knows who he is.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. All right, let's bring him in. Ron, you there, man?
Yes, I am. Good morning, guys.
Hey, thanks for taking time out. I know you're busy. You're a business owner, right?
Yes, I am. And I enjoy the flexibility, so I'm able to step away and do this.
Very cool. All right, I want to dive right in. When I was looking at your stats from this year, obviously the highlight of your season was the final three events of the year, but I want to go back. Dude, you had a really, really difficult start at the very first event, and I really want to get your thoughts on how that first event affected the remainder of your season.
Negatively.
Yeah.
It was you couldn't start any worse than the way I started, you know, and it was in part my decision to not prep for that tournament, you know, and just show up cold and never fish Texas. And, you know, I found some good groups of fish and just had some mechanical issues in the morning that got ahead of me. And I just kind of got a little bit spun out of being a rookie and just made some decisions that, you know, cost my good start. So, I mean, it was it was tough to take on the chin. I mean, you know, you get knocked out, really. I mean, I got knocked right in the chin and knocked down as hard as you can get knocked down. But I am a fighter, you know, and I just like, oh, put it behind you. It's a new day of fishing tomorrow, and, you know, adjust it to it.
Talking about your 120th place finish on Sam Rayburn to kick things off for a guy from Michigan, and then you actually did an article with FLW at the beginning of the year, talked about how you like kind of fishing out of your comfort zone, but what, like 12-foot high Sam Rayburn with the grass bitterly cold, like there's 10 feet of water on all the trees, and that's like your worst finish in all 50 of your tournaments with FLW, but then you bounce back 23rd, 38th, 74th, 16th, 3rd, and 14th. Top 10 in the Angler of the Year when it was all said and done.
Yeah, I feel real blessed with that. But, you know, that first day, though, that skunk I had in the first day was, I mean, it was painful because I had the easiest fish to catch. I had a big group of fish under my boat, you know, and just didn't make some adjustments and, you know, and left them. So it was, should have been the easiest top 30 I could have made. Instead, you know, I ended up way out of 100-something place. So, you know, lesson well learned, too, though, which, being a rookie, you're going to find some mistakes that you're going to make.
Is he still there? Ron, you there?
Yep.
Oh, okay. I thought you went away. All right. My next question is, I want to know, why are you so good on Champlain?
I think Champlain likes me. I think I don't think I'm that good on Champlain. I just feel blessed to, you know, to catch him there. You know, I think I do understand the rhythm of the lake as far as multiple sections to that lake. If you understand which section's kind of the right section to be on at a given time, that's a big part of it.
Now,
because Champlain's got big fish and winged fish in all different sections of the lake. It's a question of which section's the section to be in.
Now, being from Michigan, you know, what has been kind of your foundation, and how did you get involved in this game? To where your rookie season like this, you had the performances that you had. Really, what did you grow up doing, and how did you get so good, man?
I don't think I'm that good. I just love to fish. That's, I think, the biggest part of it is I've always loved to fish. It's always been something I just love to do, whether it's, you know, walking down the river. You know, I got a river system 5 miles from my house with the, you know, tailwaters behind it, and you can go down there and catch walleye or salmon or bass, whatever. You know, I just love doing that, and I've always loved this bass fishing as being the top species to pursue.
You look at your stats in the Costas that you fish both divisions, basically starting both divisions in 2013, 2014. So that's like 6 years, and then it's a little smattering of BFL experience prior to that, but basically just fishing one or two tournaments a year. I mean, what kind of made you jump into this thing, fishing both divisions of the Costas, and then how do you kind of, I guess, gauge your immediate success? I mean, you basically have not tournament fished without finishing in the top 10 consistently since you started seriously tournament fishing, correct?
Yeah, that's probably correct on that. I mean, I originally started off fishing tournaments locally with my brother, and we did really well, you know, fishing locally and won a few boats. And that was kind of what kind of started me on the Costa series. At the time, I think it was called something else, but the same series. And decided, you know what, you know, he was not able to fish much anymore with his family structure and new job and stuff. And I said, hey, it's a good time to, I want to see, you know, new bodies of water. You fish the same bodies of water, you know, day in and day out. They get kind of repetitive. So I kind of wanted the adventure and the challenge to see, you know, new bodies of water and learn new stuff. So, yeah, I jumped in, I think, and fished at Smith Mountain Lake. Be my first tournament with the FLW. You know, I was super blessed and won my first one I ever fished with you guys and with them. So it was a good way to start.
Yeah, what was that, 2013, mm-hmm. Matthew? Okay.
Yeah, that was 2013. So from there I decided, hey, you know what, I need to learn some more, so why not fish the Southeast Division at that point? I think the next year I went and fished the Southeast.
So you got the Cup coming up. Lake Hamilton, kind of a very unique fish, probably a lot smaller than what you're used to up there. Up there in Michigan at about 7,000 acres. Kind of talk about how you have been preparing for your shot at $300,000.
You know, I have not been preparing for it. Actually, in all honesty, I've been taking care of business at home, you know, time with my wife, you know, and then with my business, I run at home here as well. But that's what I'm doing today and tomorrow. The next day is getting truck, boat ready and hitting the road. you know, mentally I'm prepared for it. You know, I'm prepared for the heat. I'm prepared for a grind. But I'm also very excited to be a part of it.
So no pre-practice?
No, no pre-practice. I figured the lake's small enough. They give us 4 days. You know, I want to come in fresh. I mean, I debated about going and pre-practicing, and I decided to go fish the Champlain event for the coasters instead, just for some fun. So that was kind of a decision I made.
All right. For those people that aren't familiar with you and your style, how would you classify the best part of your game, and what are you most confident in doing?
You know, I'd say the best part of my game is I'm willing to do anything. I'm willing to go flip. I'm willing to go drop shot. I'm willing to go out and crank deep. You know, I'm kind of willing to abandon what I had working, because that's, I think, the biggest part in the game. I think it'll be a big part down at Hamilton. It will be the person who can make those quick adjustments. Even though you might have caught something in practice a certain way and had a predetermined idea, you've got to be willing to just scrap it and start over.
We're both in Oklahoma. Mark and I are in Oklahoma here, and we've, you know, a lot of the bass and FLW history is across the South, but we've talked about this on the show before with so many, including generational talents, but so many solid anglers coming out of the northern states, from New Jersey, New York, Michigan, you know, that type of thing. Do you think that being in Michigan, where you live, where you learn how to fish, is a lot more versatile than the rest of the country gives it credit for?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, we definitely have different seasonal migration patterns for the fish up here, with the ice getting on the lakes and stuff. And so that kind of helps you understand, you know, how important it is to follow those fish throughout the different seasons, different patterns. And so when you go down south, those patterns are a little bit different to get a hold of, as far as how much those fish really migrate and how much they really shift, you know, following different food sources and stuff. So, you know, it's definitely helped me, like fishing river systems. You know, when I jumped in to fish the tidal system on the Potomac or the James, they kind of right away just, I jumped on. It was easy to grasp a hold of the concept and to understand the fisheries.
Ron, what's your thought of the business side of the fishing game? To me, I mean, you don't have thousands of logos on your jersey. I'm just curious what your thoughts
he's
are.
He's got one. Does he even have one? I mean, it's almost it's like he stole Steve Kennedy's jersey.
I know. I want to know what your thoughts are, and are you actively pursuing, or is this something that you're just relying on the success of your business?
No, here's what my thoughts were, guys, is, you know, I hate to be one of those guys who ask for things, and so I figured, you know, I'd much rather pay out of my own pocket and work hard for where I'm at, and at some point, if I feel like I can represent some companies and can, you know, earn my spot as an angler, then I'll be searching out for some sponsorship at that point, which I'm getting close to that point here. I feel like I've kind of, feel like I belong, I guess you'd say, as far as fishing at that level.
Mark,
I didn't want to start off, you know, going to companies and asking them for what I can do for them and then not be able to do anything for them, you know. So I feel if I can, I'm usually pretty consistent as an angler. That's my biggest thing, is just being consistent and, you know, looking to fish for the long haul.
You got something to go with him.
He's got some hardware there.
And he's saying this after he's won three coasters. But, Mark, yeah. I wanted to point out to you, and this was an article, Ron, that FLW did with you prior to the start of the season. They're kind of doing some rookie. And one of your quotes that really stuck out to me, and I kind of want to get your thoughts after it, but it kind of talks about what Jeffries was talking about. You said, quote, "It looks so glamorous, but it's really damn tough. I'd love to be a full-time touring pro, making my living that way, but ultimately it will come down to learning the business side of it. I don't know the sponsorship dollars really, but there are not many guys that rely on self-pay and winnings. I don't think you can sustain that long-term."
Yeah, I believe that. I mean, as a kid growing up, as some part of the kid in my life, you know, and I love to watch bass fishing tournaments, and then there's a lot of glamour and glitz attached with it, you know, from that point. And then you start hearing about guys sleeping in their trucks and traveling and, you know, barely making the gas money to get back home. And I'm like, I'm not willing to go that route for my passion of fishing. And so that's why I've taken the time to get into the tour, was I want to take care of finances at home and priorities at home and not risk everything just to go fishing. And I do know that, you know, some of the best anglers in the world still have off years. And so I think to survive a long time, you have to have those sponsorship dollars that get behind you to sustain yourself.
you also have qualified for the FLW Tour like four or five times, and you say in that article, I wanted to make sure I was ready. You know, you're not scared of the guys because you've competed against them. Are you glad you made the jump when you did? Now that you finish in the top 10, are you like, damn, I should have done this 5 years ago? Was it exactly what you thought? Easier, tougher? Just kind of explain the experience as a whole.
Well, the experience as a whole was fantastic. You know, I love fishing the coastal level. I love fishing the tour level. It's just a little bit different strategy-wise having that fourth day to make adjustments for. But I wanted to be ready on the home front with priorities before jumping on the tour. I think I did qualify through the Coast Series every year that I did fish the coast, that I did qualify for the tour. And usually Bill Taylor gave me that call and just kind of, maybe next year. And kind of got to that point and said, yep, it's time. I'm glad I did. It's been a really good year, fun year. I think I've had a lot of mistakes as a rookie, but look forward to not making those mistakes again in the future.
All right, Berger from Alabama on the instant feedback wants to know, a lot of people with not too many years of experience fishing in Florida struggle in Florida, and he wants to know what your strategy is for some of the Florida lakes that FLW goes to, be it Toho or Seminole or Okeechobee or whatever. I mean, what's your thoughts on Florida lakes?
Oh, I absolutely love Florida. I mean, I think Florida in general, and this is across the whole state of Florida I've fished, it's one of the hardest states to win on because those fish down there are a different breed of bass. It seems like when a little tiny cold front comes in, it can shut down everything that you've established as a pattern and such in practice. So, you know, I do understand Florida quite well. And, you know, the hardest part about Florida, though, is that big bite. You know, if you don't get that big bite of two big bites, you're left behind, you know, or if you lose that big bite, you know, it can really cost you. Whereas you fish up north, a lot of the fish are close to the same size. So if you dump a 3.5, you probably can catch another 3.5 pretty easy.
Yeah. What was the biggest thing that you learned from this year on tour?
You know, probably just spend more time on my prep. I mean, that's the hardest part is I know I'm fishing against guys who do nothing but fish, you know, and that's fantastic for them, you know, and I'd like to get to that level, but my time is spent with my wife and dogs and then with my business at home. So I need to spend a little more time on tackle prep and just be a little bit better prepared for the fishing mode.
As you say, you have the house painting business and then the wife and the dogs, and then you also live in a part of the country where like 5 months out of the year you can't put your boat on the water because it's frozen. How often, and then the busy time of the year when the fish are biting, you said is your busiest time of the year to paint houses. So are you like hooking up the boat and just going to these tournaments and catching them? Or how often on an off
That's
week do you get
much.
To fit? You don't get to fish during, you're not like 5 days a week on the water and then go to the tournaments. It's like work, hang out with the dog's wife, go fish a tournament, make money.
Yep, that's pretty much it. Leave the guys working at the painting job, make sure everything's good to go, hook up the boat and truck, give the wife a kiss, and then drive off to wherever I go and try to get in that mindset of fishing. So I've been real blessed to jump in and do that.
Okay, because there's like billions of guys who try to do this, then they get to the lake and it takes them 3 days to get back in the zone. Like almost everyone, including myself and Mark, who's listening to this, is like, no, like if I have a tournament, I'm like a month out, I'm like, okay, I need to start spending time on the water. How are you able to jump right into it in a tour level event, not being on the water pretty much every day leading up to it?
You know, I don't know. I feel blessed I can do that. I feel blessed to be able to do both things, you know, and keep them both going. You know, I do think I would perform better if I would be able to spend more time focusing on the fishing in the future. But, you know, I feel real blessed to make it work at this point.
Wow.
He's a freak.
Yeah, pretty much.
I'm curious, any thoughts about fishing the Bassmaster Opens next year?
You know, I haven't had many thoughts on them yet. You know, it all comes down to, you know, next year as far as if I can get some sponsorship dollars and stuff behind me, then, yeah, I'll probably end up chasing fishing more than I do, you know, painting side. But at this point, you know, I like to fish wherever, so I have nothing against fishing Bass Opens or fishing anything in the future.
Let me ask you this. You have had your successful year then, top 10, all of the resume that you bring with it. Have you had any companies approach you during the off season or as your year went along and it became apparent that you were hacking it at this level?
No, they'll never approach you. I've told you got to do your own due diligence and seek them out, you know. So, you know, I'm new to the sport, you know, when it comes to the sponsorship side, and hopefully I can get it figured out and, you know, get some companies behind me and go forward.
All right, you can answer this or you can just say, no, I'd rather not answer it. I'm curious, do you have right now any paying sponsors that are totally related to your performance on the water?
No, I do not.
Interesting. And here's a guy that has lit it up.
Yeah.
All right.
Got a little throwback in him.
Yeah. Do you have any sponsors right now where you're on a product type of sponsorship?
Nope. No products. Not enough products. And that's where I just, you know it's easy to get products and stuff. I just decided I just didn't want to reach out for that stuff. I just strictly, I pay retail for stuff, guys.
Wow.
I pay retail for my Ranger, my Mercury, my power poles, my grass. But I also understand, you got to earn it before you deserve it. And so, you know, going forward, I think, you know, at this point, you know, I'll probably sit down with Ranger. I do love my Ranger boat. I do love Mercury. I do love my power poles. I do love, you know, all the products I run. I don't run them because I get a discount. I run them because that's what I want to run.
You need to do like a tour of high school fishing clubs and just talk to the parents.
Yeah, that'd be a good one.
That might be the statement of the year so far, Matthew. Wow, he's got a point there.
just a healthy dose of reality from Rod Nelson coming your way.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean you gotta keep it real, guys. And you know, I love the FLW family and what they've done for me as far as how they treat me as a person when I fish their circuit. You know, and a lot of these people that, you know, come into the sport don't quite understand the ethics behind a lot of the stuff either. You know, and there's a lot of stuff to learn for these young kids, you know, and I hope that, you know, things change a little bit as far as a lot of these guys, they jump in, they think they're going to become instant fame and, you know, instant sponsorship and all that stuff. And you got to learn to fish first.
I have one more question. It's just curious to me. I mean, I look at at all of your wins, all of your Costa wins, and they're on fisheries, you know, Champlain, Smith Mountain, where you can choose between largemouth and smallmouth. You're a Michigan guy. Were those wins predominantly brown fish or green fish?
Oh, shoot. The first one was a mix. I think they were all the first one was a mixed bag out there in Virginia. And then the first one on Champlain was a mixed bag. And then the second one on Champlain was all smallmouth.
Nice.
You know, and that's the thing is, you know, you got a lot of guys look and go, oh, you love fishing smallmouth here in Northern Angler. I mean, I've just been really blessed to be able to close them out on Champlain. And I've had a lot of opportunities fishing down south and fishing Sandy Cooper and fishing Florida. Well, you had those winning fish on, and had those fish that would put you in the lead, and just didn't boat them, just didn't land them. So, and that's one thing I've got to learn too is, you know, when you go to those bigger fisheries with big fish, you've got to change your tackle, you know, and get more accustomed to using that bigger stuff.
Very nice. All right, I have one more question, then we're going to let you go. I'm curious, Ron, do you still fish local jackpots, you know, the fruit jar tournament on Wednesday night, team tournaments around your area? Are you still involved with the local stuff?
No, I am not. I wish I had the time. It's just the same thing. When I get back from fishing the tour or Costa event, it's right back into work and then time with my wife. I do take and fish a Wednesday night division once every 2 weeks with a good buddy of mine. But I wouldn't really call that a tournament because it's in Indiana. It's on the river, and they've got a funky slot system where three of your bass have to be under 12 inches, and the other two have to be over 15. So, I mean, to me, it's just more of a go out and have fun just to go fishing. I wouldn't really call it a tournament at that point.
Wow. Mark, the guy puts his boat in the water 15 times a year and makes more money than me and you will ever combine in our lives.
I am a Ron Nelson fan.
I'll tell you what. Whoever's looking to buy your boat for the next year, that thing is probably pristine. It's probably got about 17 hours on it and a ton of good mojo.
Yeah.
No, I put some hours on it, guys. I did fish the coastal series of the last, 2 years. My boat now, I've been 2 years old about now. That, I would show up and I would, instead of trailering to different parts of the lake, I would run the lake just to learn it too. So,
gotcha.
I do have some hours on that engine, just for that reason.
All right, man. Well, I can't thank you enough for taking the time out. I know you're busy with your business, but I learned a lot about you. I am now a Ron Nelson fan, Matthew.
There you go.
Well, guys, I appreciate your time as well. And I always love talking fishing because I love fishing. I'm just a straight old fisherman.
That's awesome. Well, man, wish you the best at the Cup coming up here very quick, and good luck at next year's season too, man.
Thank you, guys. All right. Enjoy the talk. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. There you have it, folks. Ron Nelson. Wow. What a refreshing interview. You're just mesmerized.
No, I'm trying to think. It's like a mixture of a little bit of Kennedy in there. I feel like there's a little bit of Thrift in there.
Yeah.
And there's one other angler, and I'm trying to think like a kind of an enthusiastic, excitable angler. Because you've got the I just fish in the Kennedy,
yeah.
And then you've got the innate ability to catch him in the Thrift, but he's also got that kind of, he's got that little bit of excitement. He's not the laid back part. And I'm trying to think who that other third guy would be that would make up Ron Nelson.
Maybe a Lucas from an excitement standpoint?
Yeah, I'd have to check to see what Ron Nelson's hair looks like to see if that would fit in with the Lucas.
I don't know. You know what I was thinking about? And this just came up recently. What does Ron Nelson and Brooks Koepka have in common?
They don't celebrate when they win?
No. I don't know if you caught some of the interview and some of the comments from Koepka. There's some events he doesn't even practice.
Yeah.
He doesn't even go out and hit balls or anything. He just shows
up.
Well,
it sounds like
and
he
takes
everybody. He does practice. Ron Nelson was talking about how he puts.
But he doesn't
pre-fish.
The
pre-fish.
He doesn't do what
typically
everybody thinks that you're supposed to do.
Typically,
to have success.
You talk to these guys who have resumes like this off the record, and you find that they're out there Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. Yeah. Like they might work nights and fish all day, or they just fish, or they live in their mom's basement, or you don't know, but they're on the water constantly. And then you can kind of justify to yourself and go, okay, well, these guys are in tune. These guys are dialed in with it.
Yeah.
He's like, no, I fish every other Wednesday, and then I just go to the tour events and kick everyone's butt.
I mean, the stats speak for themselves, Matthew.
Mm-hmm.
He's had
a lot of consistency, a lot of solid consistency.
Yeah. All right, very cool stuff. All right, I want to touch a little bit real quick here, and then we're going to wrap things up on what we're going to do next week. Next week, we are having two special shows, and here's how this is going to work. No show on Monday, because you're actually going to be traveling. Is Monday or Sunday a travel day for
Sunday's
you?
Sunday's a travel day.
But you're going to be there Monday, is that right?
Yeah. We can do a show Monday if you're going to be around.
So Monday, we're doing a regular 8:30 show, except Matt is going to be on location at a writers conference, of which we are actually working on right now, putting the schedule together on what guests we're going to have. We're going to do one show in the morning where Matt's going to be on the water with who knows who. A lot of big names are going to be at this conference. And then we're going to do a second show at 8 o'clock p.m. Central Time, where we're off the water and it's just going to kind of be off the cuff, very kind of laid back, and a very good way for you guys to interact with some of the guests that we're going to have. I apologize, I can't tell you who, because we don't have the lineup set, because we're not exactly sure who is going to be there and what time they're going to be there based upon what other obligations that some of these guys might have. So next week, two shows on Monday, two shows on Tuesday, one show on Wednesday. All right, that's what we're going to do.
Okay.
All right, so Matt's going to be live via Skype from the water, and then he'll be live via Skype in the confines of, is this at the same place? Do you know?
It's in Minnesota.
Okay.
I think it's on the Mississippi River in Minnesota.
Okay, so different than it's been in previous years.
I don't know.
Don't know?
I am not speaking from a position of knowledge on this. I just drive to where they tell me to.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's kind of what we're planning on next week. So a very, very cool week next week. And then the Cup is going to take place that weekend, and Matt's going to be at the Cup for the final day after that conference. So looking forward to seeing how the guys battle some, let's just call it, adverse conditions. Would you not say, Matthew?
I wouldn't say adverse conditions. It's just going to be tough. There's a difference. Adverse conditions is like there's a tsunami coming in. There's 8 inches of
there
rain.
There is a tsunami, and it's called jet skis, pontoons, and ski boats.
It's just going to be tough. Unless I completely misread this,
yeah,
and everyone that I've talked to has completely misread this, it's just going to be tough, Mark.
I agree, man. I agree. All right. Great week this week, Matthew. I want to thank Ron Nelson for taking time out. If you haven't checked out the previous two shows, please do. Some very, very insightful information from Mark Menendez about the situation and his trip to the Capitol. And then yesterday's interview with Ike and Ellie, we got some great feedback from people. Really gives people some insight on his victory last week on the James River. So another great week. Next week, it's going to be a cool deal. Two shows on Monday, two shows on Tuesday, one show on Wednesday. And looking forward to it, Matthew.
Absolutely.
All right, everybody, be safe. That's going to wrap things up this week. We're out of here.